Daddy, what are you doing?
We're recording a podcast.
Who's listening?
Islander fans are listening.
Where are they?
Well, they're right here.
Welcome to the Isles Faithful Podcast with your host, Michael Sherline.
Hello again. And welcome back to the Isles Faithful Podcast. This is episode 5. And as always, I'm your host, Michael Sherline. Today is Friday, September 7th. September means we're awfully close to the start of the NHL season. The Islanders are about a week away from their preseason, and they're also in the midst of their prospect camps and whatnot. So over the course of the next couple of days, especially today, Andrew Gross and Arthur Staple are active on Twitter, letting everyone know who's at camp, who's going to be skating where. The Islanders are also informally skating, you know, with the NHL pros. So there's been some news on that front as well. So this week we sit down with a former AHL player, Steve Wood, somebody I've gotten to know pretty good over the last 5 years. He tells us about his career, his short stint with Bridgeport, his collegiate days, and some of the other teams he played for in the ECHL and the AHL, and what he's doing now with a program called Go Beyond the Ice. We also sit down with Kevin Carney from Isles Meetup Tampa. He's setting up a group down in Tampa to do similar things to what Charlotte, D.C., and Philly have been doing with their Isles Meetup stuff. So that's another exciting thing to listen to in this episode. We're also going to take a few more Twitter questions. Let's get into it. All right, so joining us this week for episode 5 is Steven Wood. Steven, how's it going?
Doing great, Mike. How are you, buddy?
Doing well, thanks. So the weather is pretty much like we're used to when we're away on vacation here, moving into September. I'm sure it's just as hot up by you in the Northeast.
Oh, yeah, it's been boiling. My grass is as brown as it's ever been, so we got to work on that this fall.
I hear you. I got plenty of moles and voles and crabgrass, and it's just a disaster.
Yeah, it's getting ugly. It's getting ugly.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about your connection to Bridgeport and the Islanders and your career and what you're up to now. So I'll let you get right into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it, Mike. So, you know, I was, just chatting previously with you here, talking about kind of reminiscing about my time at Bridgeport, albeit a little short, played about 12 games with the Bridgeport Tigers previously to that season. I was in Peoria playing in the St. Louis Blues farm team. So playing with Peoria as well as playing with Alaska in the ECHL. And I loved Alaska, one of the best places I played. I played in a few cities, and that place was just gorgeous and great fans, and it was an incredible experience. But I got the message from my coach there saying that there was a trade. I believe it was Peter Ferraro for me, or I don't know if anything else was involved in that trade, but kind of an interesting deal. Ended up in Bridgeport, living over there in on the beach. What a great experience that was, actually. Beautiful little place. One of the NHL guys, I believe, kind of either he may have got traded eventually, and I ended up staying at his place, and it was a nice experience. But playing for Jack Capuano was a great experience. Dan Marshall was there as well. Bernie Cassell and Joe Ferris, and Joe, and you know, was a great guy as well. But Jack and I kind of hit it off, and he was kind of a supporter of me while I was there for my 12 game stint. Interestingly enough, Mike, there were a lot of associate head coaches that year, right? I don't know if you remember that. And who was the head and who was the assistant was kind of an interesting hot topic at that time. Because, again, I came in 12 games kind of towards the end of the season. I think there had been some, you know, job switching and so forth as I entered the picture. So there was a little bit of history there. But definitely a fun and interesting experience as far as my career went. I did go and play in the playoffs for Alaska you know, after that season. So it was a good experience, you know, and I got to go back to Alaska and I got to play some good games out in the, you know, for the Santa Tigers and their nice facility there. You know, Jeff Tambellini was there, Boganicki, old Mark Watton was a veteran defenseman while I was, you know, I was a D man. So kind of looked up to him as I was playing. So it was a good experience. A little bit of a flash in the pan for me. I know, you know, Greg Johnson was there and Kenny McGowan, some of the younger guys that I kind of grew up playing, you know, played college against. They were BU guys, so I played at Providence College. And so we actually lived in that house together. You know, overall great experience at Bridgeport.
All right, well, take us into, you know, turning pro. What was, you know, playing in Boston like and how – take us through, you know, how you became a pro essentially.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So I played my, I could go as far, I can kind of start at high school. I played at Lawrence Academy, which was at the time, and still is actually, they just won the New England tournament, big tournament here in New England, prep school tournament. They just won it this past year. My good friend, Robbie Barker, who was my D partner while we were at Lawrence Academy, graduated in 2000. He's the head coach this year, so congrats to him. So I played 4 years at prep school. After my senior year, it was kind of that decision: do I go out to the USHL and play 1 year, or, you know, what kind of college options are there for me? And so by the end of my senior year, I did have my best option was Providence College. Right, I was talking to, you know, multiple colleges, but Providence was the most aggressive. And, you know, at the time, my senior year, my coach, Charlie Corey, came down to my dorm room and said, I was really excited about UMaine and a few other schools. And he said, Woody, what are you thinking? Why? And I said, well, you know, it was just my brother played at BU. So I, you know, UMaine and BU and BC were the big time schools, you know, while I was watching my brother play. And he said, look at this roster, right? And he said, there's about 8 to 10 guys at Providence College who are defensemen right now, maybe 8 or 9. And he looked, showed me the UMaine roster, and there was, you know, the sheet went on, right? 12 to 15 guys, you know, how many guys are, so he said, where do you think you're going to be able to go play, whether it's your freshman, sophomore, you know, where do you think you're going to end up being able to play? Where are you going to have your best shot? So you kind of have to look at the game like that. And at a young age, that was hard to do. But some of the best advice that I did get, because I went to Providence and was able to play right away as a freshman and, you know, played a bunch of games, you know, over the course of the next 4 years. So then leading into pro. So, you know, I had a good year my senior year, was an All-American, was never drafted, but was picked up by the Philadelphia Flyers right out of college. So I played my first 2 full professional years with the Flyers organization, which was an incredible experience because, you know, I played in the AHL. I never ended up playing up with the big guys, but being in the same facility as the Flyers, you know, so it was the Phantoms at the time, and the Flyers were in the same exact building. So we got to see all the guys, right? Right out of college, I was sitting next to, you know, Jean LeClair and Jeremy Roenick, and just an incredible experience for a young kid out of college to see the actual work ethic that it took, you know, Desjardins and guys like that who were older, just the physical capabilities that they had just shocked me. Right. So I had a lot of work ahead of me, I realized. So that was a cool experience. And then, you know, being picked up by St. Louis, which kind of then brought me to Bridgeport. And soon after that, after Bridgeport, I decided to kind of take what I guess the guys call now as the farewell tour. I played over in Europe for a little bit, which was a really cool experience. Played in England and played in Denmark. Denmark was a high level of skill, very good league there. And then over to England, and then that was it. The real world was calling, which is kind of an interesting story in itself after 7 years of a job that I didn't quite love. Right. I think we'll get into that though.
Yeah. Your story is definitely, not 100% unique, for people who, didn't take the sports route, but, you definitely seem to have carved yourself a niche for someone who, as you, in your own words, weren't cut out for the, 9-to-5 life.
Right. Right.
Now, before we get into that, you do have connections to some current and former Islanders. You had mentioned in our pre-chat Franz Nielsen, and then you just mentioned Denmark again. But I believe you also are friendly with Dennis Seidenberg, and I'm 99% sure he was going to get a PTO this year with the Islanders, so you might know more than me.
Yeah, so I did reach out to him recently, and so funny enough, he was like my first partner. So I came out of college in 04, and I went to, so right after my senior season, had a good season, I was talking with a couple NHL teams. I was really excited about that whole process. I went and signed with the Flyers, played like four games. There was 10 games left in the Phantoms, the AHL team's season. Played four of them with Freddie Meyer, and he was my partner. And then Dennis Seidenberg was my partner the following year because there was an NHL lockout, right? So Yanni Pikkanen, Dennis Seidenberg, John Sim, a bunch of forwards, Jeff Carter ended up on the team, Ben Eager, all these guys that were younger guys that were probably, going to be playing in the NHL that year, all played on my AHL team for the Phantoms. So that's how I got to know Dennis Seidenberg, and what a great experience that was for me to literally be partnered with Dennis and other guys that ended up playing a ton of NHL games. But also that was kind of, that was tough for me to stay on that roster. So I ended up playing some ECHL games, almost splitting the season over the next couple of years. But Dennis is, he's a great guy, and we talk about that kind of physical shape you need to be in. There wasn't a guy that I ever met that took that more serious, which is amazing, right? That guy, and I kind of know him now. We're trying to get him. He's going to be part of the program I'm running now, Beyond the Ice, which we'll get into. But I mean, he literally would count, and I've read this before about health, different ways to get healthy and stronger. He would literally count how many times he would chew his meal, right? So we'd be at a pregame meal, and it would take him forever. And the boys are just trying to get out of there to go get a pregame nap, but he would be always the slowest guy at the table because he, if you chew and count how many chews you have each bite, and you process the food a certain way, it gets to your muscles better and all this. And he knew everything about it, so he was a madman, and no wonder he's still playing, right? And hopefully he signs on with the Islanders. I wish the best of luck to him for sure.
Yeah, I have heard that about him, funnily enough. And, I think from the time you played to even now, guys like him have had to almost adapt to the changing science behind everything and the ways teams incorporate that into their regimen. And it's crazy to think that, 20 years ago you had guys who smoked a pack of cigarettes and drank a case of beer in the locker room, and now – it's all about intake and no carbs and vitamins and what supplements you can take or not even supplements. Like you just need to be mindful about what you put in your body just to prevent, any of those positives that the league's going to test you for. So it's definitely like something that I can't wrap my head around, only having played high school, not having played really at any kind of level like you or the other people around the league. It's just something that I it's like, wow, this is something that you guys dealt with on a daily basis.
It's amazing. And I think I grew up when I turned pro in 2004 after my college season, there were still guys that had that, the older vets had that mentality a little bit, but you could tell it was catching up to them because guys that were coming to the league were just in phenomenal shape. And funny enough, so, Dennis is German, right? So he kind of had that structured mentality in him. But not to say the U.S. guys do, but did. But I think some of the older U.S. guys kind of had that, you know, the old school, you know, training camps for getting in shape. Mm-hmm. But that was going away very quickly when I was there, and you could tell the young kids, you know, the off season is certainly not what it was 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago. Now, you know, you get a few weeks off at the end of the season, and you're ready to go, right? And even during the season, the workouts that were going on that I was not used to during the season were amazing. Like just the to be in that peak shape as a, you know, athlete and especially a hockey player, it was amazing what some of these guys were doing.
I just got finished saying it's one of those things that I have a hard time wrapping my mind around. And believe it or not, I did get a little bit of off ice training for a story that I had wrote on my blog back when my blog was active. And I got run through the mill with all sorts of training and stretches. Yeah. And Zenon Konopka was actually on a stationary bike as the Islanders strength and conditioning coach was putting me through the paces, and he was chirping me and, wow, you're really sweaty, Mike, what's going on? And all this other stuff. And I'm like, well, you know,
yeah,
I play in a beer league.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so my first experience after college, and now after the college season, you know, half the guys are going to partying and half the guys are they're, if they're not a senior or junior thinking of going to play pro yet, they're not thinking about, okay, what team wants me right now and where might I end up? But, you know, I ended up in my very first workout, you know, after 2 weeks off of my season. And not that you get out of shape that quickly, but I saw how hard these guys worked the first day I got in the gym, and we were doing it. The guys were doing a treadmill workout and they were doing sprints on the treadmill. So there were like five guys or three guys would rotate in. You jump on the treadmill for 30 seconds, you'd sprint. Next thing you know, they had this thing facing straight up and you'd get on it. You'd sprint, you'd do 12 to 20, however many sprints it was, 5 to 10 sprints into this thing. I went into the bathroom, Mike, and puked. Because I was like, I thought I was in incredible shape. I was in great shape. I was playing 30 minutes a game in my college season. You know what I mean? I was in good shape, and I got on that thing and I just was like, my eyes opened wide. I was like, holy cow, these guys are animals. And so you had to keep up with that. And you know, it didn't take too long to adjust to it, but it was just for the college guys that play, you know, 40 games, it's a whole different world to go then work out. And now even the college games probably changed since I've been out. But, it was a big step, ahead.
Now, I think this is like the perfect opportunity to segue into what you're currently up to with Beyond the Ice. So, you know, I mentioned earlier that I had stumbled across an article in the Boston Globe, and it referenced a letter that you had written, you know, to yourself. And, you know, why don't we go into that? Tell us a little bit about Beyond the Ice and how that started.
Yeah, absolutely. So Beyond the Ice, I mean, I almost have to take a step back, right? So after I played professional hockey and then I went into Europe for 2 years and played there, I came home and it was time to get, you know, to get a real world job or a big boy job, like some people would say. And, you know, so I knew some people that were pretty successful in the IT world, IT sales. And I said, okay, well, I'll go do that with really no clue, right? Just, all right, let's go. I'll go do an interview. So I ended up working for 7 years in the IT world. Now, not to knock that. I mean, some, you can be very successful doing that, but I was not exactly being me in that role, right? I wasn't doing what I was passionate about. I wasn't doing what I loved. It was very obvious. And I did that for a long time, right? So that that weighed on me. And finally, you know, my wife and I were talking, and she had changed jobs and had some success in what she was doing. But I saw how energetic she was about what she did. And I said, this is it. Like, I got to get out of what I'm doing and I got to do what I love. And it's hockey and it's mentoring young kids to play the game and play the game right and to grow character through the game of hockey, because that's really what the game of hockey can teach, as well as any other team sport. But I think hockey is in particular is one of those sports where there's guys with so much character that those things can very easily leak out into life, right? Not just being a great teammate, but being a great brother or great sister or son or daughter, right? So being, you know, kind of putting that life spin onto it. But to get to why Beyond the Ice and how Beyond the Ice started, you know, I was watching the Olympics when they were in Rio de Janeiro, and Ryan Murphy was a swimmer for the U.S. team, and he swam the 100-meter dash. And when he was, I think, 7 years old, I watched a special on ABC during that time. I was sitting there with my wife and we were watching it, and the Ryan Murphy story came up, and it was basically a letter that he wrote to his parents when he was 7 years old. And the letter said, you know, I'm going to be the best swimmer in the world. I'm going to win a gold medal. And I'm going to, with all the certainty of a 7 year old, right? I'm going to be in the Olympics and I'm going to win a gold medal. You know, and it went on. And just the whole letter itself kind of rang a bell to me. And I went to my wife, Kate, and I said, Kate, I wrote my class, because we had, when I was 7 or 8 years old, I wrote the exact same letter. You know, you had to read it to your class. And I remember it was called, and I even remember the title was The Journey to My Dream. And I said, I have to get up in the attic and find that letter. Right. And I didn't know what to expect or what exactly I wrote. I just remember the kind of outlines of it. So Mike, I went up to the attic and I found it. Took a little while, you know, scrummaged through some papers, but I found it. And when I read that, there's a particular line that I'll read. And I'm 7 years old and I just read this. I talk about wanting to play college hockey and wanting to play in the NHL and how I'm going to do it, right? And basically following in my brother's footsteps, because he was playing at BU at the time. But I wrote a particular line that really kind of struck me, and it goes like this: even if my dream doesn't come true, I could shoot for the minor leagues, right? So
it's like you gave yourself an out.
I'm 7 or 8 years old and I – didn't say I had that kind of line. In the, you know, the next line might say, you know, it'll take a lot of luck to play in the NHL. There were a few other lines, talking about luck playing in the NHL. And it goes on to say, if I made it to the NHL, I wouldn't care what team, right? And I played for, because I would be overwhelmed by being there. It wouldn't matter. So I'm 7 years old and I'm already like scared to make it something deep, right? I'm seven, so I'm not overthinking this, but as a 37 year old, I'm thinking about it. And I set a plateau. I believe I set a plateau for myself, because when I made it to the minor leagues, I was like on cloud nine, right? I was like, wow, I'm here. But that didn't take long to go, well, wow, you know, obviously my goal is the NHL, but like you said, I kind of gave myself an out, and that kind of tugged at my stomach. I didn't feel good about it. I was reading it to my wife and I'm like, wow, this could strike a chord. It struck a chord with me. And I know there's a lot of young hockey players out there. You know, you don't look at the Sidney Crosby video of him when he's shooting, you know, pucks into his, the dryer in his basement. I mean, his goal wasn't at that point to say, hopefully, you know, he didn't give himself an out, right? Obviously, he's a extremely ridiculously talented player, right? But, you know, I believe, and I truly do now kind of reflecting on it, that I had the ability and the size to play in the NHL. I was right at the doorstep. Now, I don't go back and make an excuse that there was a lockout and I should have played in the NHL. That's the last thing I do. But I look at this and I say, wow. You know, that just kind of gave me the base. And when I read this to myself, I was still working in IT. And I told my wife, like, I'm like, there's so many lessons that I learned through my career, through college, through pro, because the best coaches that I've ever had
and the best coaches that last are guys that are trying to mature players. They're trying to grow a man, right? They're trying to not just make the best players, but they're trying to get players that you want on your team because they're good to be around, right? You watch teams that win championships. Of course, they have the guys that are studs and they have certain players that can do certain things. But if they don't mesh, they're not going to win the Stanley Cup that year. It's just not going to happen, right? I mean, we'll watch the Bruins in 11. They were not the best team. My team in Trenton, let's put a little ECHL spin on it. We won the Kelly Cup, and we were the third seed in the East, right? So we had an incredible like bond where guys would it's not all about fighting, but guys would step up for each other, and there was the term team tough, where you didn't have someone fighting, but someone would step up for their teammates left and right, all over the place, all the time. And that, that's just kind of a lesson that is so important in the game. But we touch on everything. So from that article, I said, all right, Kate, I'm going to take these lessons that coaches have taught me, and I've gotten numerous articles sent to me, by my college coach, Paul Pooley, when I was at Providence and I was a young kid and maybe not as focused as he wanted me to be. He gave me all this material that is now part of Beyond the Ice, but now I have a platform for it to show kids or other athletes that are interested in getting better and growing themselves, growing their character through the game of hockey. Right. So it's a 7-week program. We meet once a week. It's all virtual. It's all online. It's basically the player will click a button and here we are. We're in like a virtual meeting where I can pull videos. We talk about some great topics like body language and how important that is for everything, right? For a scout watching a player, if this kid that they think is pretty good is on the bench and he's shaking his head because his teammate gave him a bad pass, I'm crossing that guy off my list immediately. And I think a lot of scouts would. But a lot of young players aren't thinking about that. So we'll watch clips of certain players in the NHL talking, when they're mic'd up. There's a lot of World Junior clips that Sidney Crosby's mic'd up and he's talking to Bergeron or whoever he was part of. Paired up him, Bergeron and Bergeron and Marchand, I think, and they're talking, right? They're having a constructive conversation where someone made a mistake, but they're having a conversation about it. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot about communication as well, and we touch all those things. But I show them I'll show the video so the kids can see it, and then I'll show another example of either another sport or hockey where they're, guys are yelling at each other and they're not communicating in the right way. And their body language is, everyone can see they're yelling at each other. And what does that actually look like when you're stepping back from it and looking at it? So we talk about stuff like that and the importance of visualization and having a good mindset. And of course, failing, right? The power of failing is a huge topic we talk about because a lot of people don't understand what comes after failure. It's going to be, people think that's the end of it, right? When I first got cut from the AHL, when there was no NHL and the AHL team sent me down, I thought failure was final. I thought, oh my God, I'm in the ECHL. That's it. Right. But that's not the mentality. How many guys have played ECHL games are now playing in the NHL? That number's grown a lot. I used to follow that. I haven't for a while, but the point is everyone's failing every day. And if you think that's final, you're not going to grow.
I think the key there is, like you said, failure isn't always final, but you have to pick a spot somewhere down the line where you need to make an agreement with yourself to say, all right, well, I've given it everything that I possibly could in every given way. And then you turn that energy into something else positive like you're doing. So I think, the kids that you're coaching, and I've known you for, 5 years now?
Yeah.
So the kids that you're coaching, I think, have a great voice and a great, guide along this journey, because you definitely have that type of head on your shoulders and have turned your passion into something that can give back. And I think that's something that's extremely admirable, and or it's a reason why I've wanted to speak to you about this for the last year.
I appreciate it. You know, honestly, the best teammates I've had and the best coaches I've had didn't always have it easy, right? They failed. You know, some of my best coaches, they got in trouble. They had, you know, past where they had to build back up, right? And if you don't have that, it can be harder, unless you're, you know, a really special person or you have that kind of, you know, ability. But, you know, sometimes, like, I look and we stress how important skating is in the game, because I just think you may not be the best player now in high school, but if you can skate and you can keep working hard at that, you can eventually find a spot somewhere, right? Maybe you don't score the most goals, but if you keep skating and keep those fundamentals, you can go further than a kid, right, that is got all the talent in the world but won't muck it up. You know, I saw so many guys that played for so long that I could never understood how they were still playing at the level they were, but they had something in them that said, I'm going to be better than this guy next to me. I'm not, it didn't come easy for them. So they had that fight in them, right? So if you don't have that, if you're a skill guy and you're just kind of moseying through practice because you can handle, you know, the skill stuff, you're going to have a rude awakening at some point.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm sitting over here and I'm nodding my head as you're talking, because I'm trying to, you know, go back to going through drills and wind sprints and suicides and everything else in high school that we hated. But at the same time, I loved to skate. That was my thing. Like, I wouldn't say one of the best. I was up there in terms of skating, and I definitely got better the older that I've gotten, and I still can skate, which is probably why the only reason why I play.
Because
my stamina isn't definitely near where it was. But, you know, it takes a special person to make it. And, you know, I think everybody understands that. And it's a matter of putting all the tools together, you know, especially in your head. You know, your head has to talk to your whole entire body, and then it has to talk to and listen to a bunch of different variables inside and out. So,
yeah, absolutely.
To be able to utilize everything, I think, is a key. And I'm sure that's part of what you teach.
Yeah, absolutely. And we bring guys on. So Dennis Seidenberg hasn't been on yet. He's supposed to come on mid-September for us. But Kevin Rooney, who played his first NHL game a year or two ago with the Devils, New Jersey Devils. So he's the perfect example of what Beyond the Ice is all about. He played in a local, you know, Canton High, actually where I'm from. He played at Canton High. You know, he played there. He was the best player there, right? It's good town hockey. Then he went to play at Berkshire, I believe, and which is a prep school. And he had a coach there that told him that he wouldn't play, right? So he had to figure out a way to stay on that high school team, right? So he had that, like, that battle. All right, what do I do? How do I stay on the ice? How do I get shifts, like, day by day? How do I, you know, hey, coach, in an open conversation with the coach, what do I do here to make sure I'm still playing? And then he got on with Providence College, not a full scholarship or any scholarship. He talked to Nate Lehman and said, hey, take me, you know, if you take me, is there a chance I can get a scholarship if I show you I belong? Right. So he said, yeah, absolutely. He commits to Providence. His coach at Berkshire says, I don't know what the heck you're doing that. You're never going to play there. This probably gave him more drive, right? And then he went and played at Providence, won a national championship. I watched him play a few times. He's a kid who stuck to his game. He was coachable. He was a winger. He stayed along the boards. He did what he was supposed to do. He said, you could tell. He just knew. He didn't play outside of himself. He wasn't a guy with tons of skill. that would then play, think he could toe drag everyone on the ice and then get himself into trouble and then find himself on the bench. He was a guy that said, here's my skill set. I'm going to go do that to my fullest. And that's, you know, that's the advice I'd give to anyone. Next thing you know, wins a national championship, signs on with Albany and the Devils, plays his first NHL game. And now in the conversation I had with him, he said they had him playing center. Right. He goes, no, I'm going to try and tune my winger game up, because guess what? It's a numbers game at that point. How do I stay on this team? How do I play in the NHL? There's two centers on two wingers on the ice at a time and one center. So do the math, right? Mm-hmm. He has to beat out a few less guys if he can survive as a winger. So let me figure out, let me stay out on the ice and catch passes from my D-man and chip him out so that I can be the reliable guy on the ice to get the puck out of the zone. Or, you know, you have to have that mentality, that scrapper mentality to keep moving, unless you're an uber talented guy who doesn't need to do that. Right. And there's not many of those that were born. There's a handful. So if you can find a way to get that kind of it factor, that grit and go through it like you need to, there's no minor league route. It's, I need to find a way to make it where, and this relates to whether you want to be a musician or a mathematician or a whatever it is, right? An artist or a softball player or anything. These characteristics that we're talking about and beyond the ice relate to it all. And people taught me this. People told me this when I was in high school, but they screamed it at me, right? So there, I've had plenty of coaches along the lines that told me all these things about making your bed and cleaning your room, and then you'll score more goals, or your team would be doing this and that. And I was like, what are they talking about? But you know, when you look at the big picture later on, there's certainly a connection to those things. If you're responsible, you know, off the ice, you're going to be counted on the ice. And that's a fact.
Wow. This is some deep stuff. And what is the reaction of your students when you start to get into stuff like this? Is it kind of like the same type of reaction that I just gave?
So I know, you know, it's the age groups that I'm doing. I've done 7-year-olds to 17-year-olds. The 7-year-olds, it's their parents love it. They love it. The reactions are great. It's hard to read a 7 to 10-year-old with some of these things, but I dumb it down. You know, we talk about their, you know, what are they doing in class or what type of classmate they're being. We definitely dumb it down. I think the bread and butter is, I honestly don't think you're young enough to hear this message. Like, I have 3 young girls, 6, 4, and 2. And what are you going to stress to them? To be a good person or to just go try and be the most talented person? You know, what are you going to tell your kids? So I don't think you can be too young to hear some version of this message. It definitely changes as we go, but, you know, the older kids and the kids that are chattier are super into it. You know, we talk about failure and we'll have fun with it. I'll put up some guys that have failed, obviously the Michael Jordan story, but it goes on. Like Abe Lincoln was lost in 6 or 7 elections before he was elected president. Like these, we pull all these cool facts out that we can, you know, we can kind of keep the kids involved and interested and have them looking at things differently, right? If they don't make a team, it's not the end of the world. What do you do next?
Pick yourself up, dust yourself off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. So the feedback's been great. It's been a lot more gratifying than the IT world for me.
I'm glad to hear it.
You know, the experience of building character through a game is so important. So athletics can really shape a person mentally and physically, right? And that's the program. The program's designed to empower players to make sure they're taking full advantage of the opportunities that they'll be getting in life, right? Both on and off the ice, making decisions. every single decision that you make, I try and get the kids to think, right, if every decision you make, it's either going that one decision that you do during the day, you make thousands a day, each one of those is pulling you further away from your goal or it's dragging you closer to your goal, right? Whether that's to make a varsity hockey team or to, you know, get in better shape or, you know, be better to your mom or dad or whatever it is, right? All those decisions add up, and that's kind of, that's what we're trying to get at with Beyond the Ice. And we are doing on, you know, hockey, you know, it's about half that. It's half the what's called heavy stuff, and it's half, you know, breaking down the hockey stride, talking about the shot and how that, you know, how your stick flexes and how to get the most out of your shot, and one-on-ones, how to properly play them as a forward and as a defenseman. So we do get into that stuff, which I absolutely love as well. But really the unique stuff, I think, is in the character building for sure.
Great stuff, man. Great stuff. Any chance you want to take on a 38-year-old beer leaguer who could potentially lose 60 to 65 pounds?
Let's go. Let's go. I don't know who you're talking about, but we can get him going. We'll have to talk about that in the jacuzzi in Florida.
Yeah, so before we wrap things up, you know, it's a unique story about how Woody and I met here about 5 years ago. I was on a family trip to Florida, like I go to every March, and his father-in-law noticed I was wearing an Islanders hat and said, "Oh, you know, you're a hockey fan?" We got to chat, and, "Oh, my son-in-law played pro hockey." I was like, "Oh, no way, get out of town." Steve comes rolling into the hot tub, introduces himself, and we start to talk about his career, and,
yeah,
you know, we became friendly. We wound up talking that whole week, and for whatever reason, we wind up being there the same week every year, and
yeah,
here we are. Our kids are friendly now. Our wives kind of knew each other beforehand, coincidentally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a small world, man. That's what it's all about. And so, as we talk about, if you didn't put yourself out there, or I didn't come say hello to you, or, you know, that's a bit what Beyond the Ice is all about, right? What you put out there, if you were grumpy Gus or I was said the hell with that guy that day, you know, would we have developed a relationship? No, right? So that's what happens in life. If you're open to that, you're gonna grow and meet people, and people will be willing to help you, and you'll help people along the way, and that's how it works, right?
Yep, and that's a big reason why I decided to, you know, start the Isles Faithful podcast. You know, I turned a negative in John Tavares leaving for Toronto into, yeah, what is turning into be a really fun thing and has been, you know, gaining traction and great feedback. And, you know, I hope it continues to do so moving into the future here as the season progresses.
Yeah, absolutely. Best of luck to you, Mike. I hope it continues to grow, and I'll be looking forward to seeing you in April.
Thank you, you too. And hopefully at some point this winter we can hook up and play some shinny.
Absolutely. We'll get after it. No toe drags up the middle, buddy.
Nah, I'm up the boards all the time. Dump and chase. Dump chasing off.
Up and out. Get it out. Attaboy.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me. And this has been a great thing. Now tell everyone before you go where everyone can find your website.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's GoBeyondTheIce.com. You can grab some info there and shoot me a message. And if, you know, just really boys, girls, people of all ages, it's really open for all. It's definitely a conversation that I think everyone can have with their kids or open it up. And we're starting to do a lot of teamwork as well with full teams, which is very interesting and very fun. So if you know anyone that needs a, you know, as a team would find some value out of this, I think it would be a great experience.
All right. Will do. I'll definitely keep you in mind, and best of luck moving forward, and I'll speak to you soon.
All right, Mike. Thanks a lot, buddy.
No problem. All right. So we have another great guest lined up for you in episode 5. We're with Kevin Carney, who is also known as Isles Meetup underscore TPA, as in the Isles Meetup group down in Tampa, Florida. Kevin, how's it going?
That's going great. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So I am just so into all of these awesome groups of transplanted Islander fans all over the country that seem to be popping up and doing great things. You know, we spoke to Mike from Isles Meetup Charlotte. Super excited for them and what they have going on down there. I know you recently just had to relocate to Tampa, and he pushed you along to do this, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. So tell me how you met Mike, and how did this all start for you?
So it actually started out with one tweet. I had just moved to the Charlotte area and, you know, really didn't know anybody. And I saw a tweet out there as, you know, an Islander fan looking to meet up with other Islander fans. And so we picked a bar downtown Charlotte, and, you know, five other Islander fans showed up. So there were six of us and our wives and girlfriends, what have you. And it just really just blossomed from there. Mike was really the guy who kind of pushed it along. You know, he had reached out to the local bars to find us a home, and, you know, and so here's a shout out to the Upper Deck in Charlotte, for accommodating us. They've been totally awesome. You know, Mike put a lot of effort into it, and it shows, you know, that, he's really an awesome guy, and, deserves a lot of credit for getting that group started. And, it was very fun from the beginning. It also helped that we were, you know, meeting up for the playoff games, because we got to watch the playoffs, and it was exciting seeing, you know, the OT winner in the game scored by the player I shall not name. But yeah, that was pretty much the start of it.
That's really, 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 really good. Like I said, you know, Mike was a great interview. I'm so excited for everything that all of you guys are doing, you know, be it down there in Tampa and Charlotte and Philly, you know, and wherever else that's going to pop up. I think I had read something the other day about something starting in Denver, if possible. So that's going to be really cool, too. That's another city that I've never been to. Moving on, how did you become an Islander fan, and where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Long Island, Suffolk County, in the Islip, Great River area. I became an Islander fan. I mean, I quite honestly did not even know what hockey was. I was about, I don't know, 9 years old. My mother took me to a game. It was actually against the Penguins, and the Islanders lost that game 3-2, I think it was. But that was really how it started. You know, from that point on, I was hooked. I was instantly hooked. You know, I saw all the hitting and the fighting and the scoring and the fast play. And I knew this was the game for me, you know. So, you know, I actually went out to play some hockey, you know, from there. You know, so that's really how I became an Islander fan. And it was right before they won, you know, four cups in a row. So, you know, what an amazing time to discover the sport and just happen to discover, you know, a team that went on to become a dynasty. So, you know, it was great.
Great. You know, so what team did you play for in high school? I mean, I know you said you grew up in Great River.
Yeah, I didn't play for any high school teams. You know, I was playing whatever hockey I could afford to play. So at the time it was, you know, roller hockey, deck hockey, street hockey, ice hockey. You know, me and a bunch of friends, we would rent the rink out at Kings Park, Superior Ice Rink, at like 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night, because that was the only time the ice was available. And it was really one of the only rinks in the area. I played deck hockey in Oakdale. It was like beer league kind of stuff. So that was really, you know, the hockey I played, and you know, I'm 50 years old now and I still play. Found a rink right down the road from my house here in Tampa, so I'm going to be joining the league over here at some point.
Good for you, man. You know, I'm 38, but I do play the epitome of beer league. I'm actually on Blue Point Brewery's hockey team.
Sweet.
I've been on that team for almost 10 years now. But I've been playing my whole life. I grew up, like I mentioned in our pre-chat, I grew up in Bethpage. I played for Bethpage High School. Almost played travel. I could have made the Lions, but my parents kind of balked at the idea of travel. So I still give my dad a little bit of heck about that. But but yeah, so I hope I'm going to be right there with you in another 12 years, and I'm still playing, because I tell my wife all the time, until the doctor tells me that I'm not allowed to play, I'm going to be out there on the ice. There's no better feeling.
Yep.
So, great. You know, I know you're new to the Tampa area. How many people, you know, have you managed to reach out to at this point? You know, and where can everybody, you know, find information on your whole group? You know, do you have a Facebook? Do you have a Twitter?
Yeah, so I have a Twitter page. It's at Isles Meetup underscore TPA. Similar format to the handle that Mike started with the Charlotte team. The Charlotte Meetup group. I have about 160 followers right now at last count. I think the bulk of them I got in the first few days. It's kind of tapered off a little bit, but I think as the season picks up and people are looking for a place to get information on what we're doing in Tampa, they'll, you know, I'm sure that number will pick up. And I would imagine, you know, when we get to the game, one of the games down here, you know, other Islander fans will see us sitting together as a group and want to find out how they can join up, you know, in all the fun. So that's, I don't have a Facebook page just yet, but that'll probably be coming soon.
All right. Excellent. Do you have a date set in mind for the first meet? Are you going to meet up for the Islanders home opener? Is there a game that you guys are going to plan on attending in Tampa?
Yeah, I'm working on that. You know, being new to the area, I'm very unfamiliar with, you know, the local venues, you know, bars and what have you, on where I might be able to get a group together. And I live a bit north of the city, so I would most likely have to pick something kind of central where, you know, fans can get together. So I'm working on that. But in the meantime, I managed to get 20 tickets for the game when the Islanders are here in November 8th. So I've got 20 fans sitting up in section 301. And I also had a number of other fans. I want to say at least another 10 fans who aren't sitting with us in the group, but saw that, you know, we were getting together and want to hopefully tailgate with us. And, you know, I'm going to try to get a spot in the parking lot if I can. You know, I'm not very familiar with the area. So if we're not in the parking lot, you know, I'll see if I can find a bar downtown that we could probably get together at before the game, but definitely want to get the people together.
That sounds really exciting. And, you know, I've never personally been down there to Amalie Arena, but I've heard really good things. I heard it's a destination where you can go and you spend basically the whole entire day. There's a bunch of bars and restaurants and everything you can go and you can hang out at, but you could also still tailgate in the parking lot like Long Islanders are used to at the Coliseum. So that's definitely a positive. So keep me updated. And, you know, obviously I will do my best to get your word out there as you move forward. Now, to that end, you know, I know you briefly explained that because you're new to the area, you're trying to feel things out, but is there a bar or a restaurant that you guys have been eyeing for like a base of operations yet?
Not yet. You know, I did find a bar in my neighborhood north of the city, which is, you know, a good 15 miles, you know, 20 miles north of downtown Tampa that have, you know, they have the NHL package. So, you know, worst comes to worst, I'll set up shop there, but I am looking for something a bit more central and, you know, hopefully we'll be able to secure something perhaps for the home opener, if not, you know, one of the games soon after that. So still working on that.
All right. Now, do you have any, you know, specific goals or things that you've learned through Mike that you want to, you know, strive for in your own group?
Yeah, well, for one thing, I strive to be as awesome as Mike.
He's pretty awesome. I will give you that. The guy made me want to like jump on a plane and come and hang out.
Yeah, and you know, Mike has kind of pushed me along, and his friend Brett, who started the Philly group, you know, he kind of egged us on and you know, kind of got us into setting this up. So you know, I only hope to strive to be as good as Mike has been at getting this all together. Because I have to tell you, what he's done has been amazing. I mean, he's got 100 plus fans going to the game, the opener in Raleigh, and then they're going right back, you know, a few weeks later for the next round. You know, I actually went to a few of those games up in Raleigh, and we had 100 plus fans, and you know, and that was just the where we were sitting, you know, the fans that were sitting together. There were plenty more that were sitting elsewhere in the arena, and they got together with us in the parking lot before the game. It was just absolutely amazing. And he's gotten this bar downtown, the upper deck, for the games, and they put the game on all the TVs, and it's been rather special. So that's my goal. I want to be like Mike.
You know, it's funny that you say that, though, because he had a bunch of great things to say about you, and he said that you were like a really awesome dude, and that he reached out to you when you had to move and said you need to do this down in Tampa. You know, and I know personally that Tampa is a hotbed for Islanders and Long Islanders because my own family is down in the Newport Richey area. So I am 100% going to push them all to all the things that you're going to be doing because I know for a fact that they're A, hockey fans, B, they have adopted Tampa only because they're there all year. But they are Islander fans at heart, so I wouldn't be surprised if they don the Islanders gear and join up for some cool stuff.
That'd be great.
That would be awesome, yeah. And like I said, I'm hoping at some point to myself attend a couple of these things, you know, as much as my wife probably wouldn't really like it. But I'm going to start off close with Philly and D.C., and you know, moving forward, we'll take it from there. Now, Yes Men Outfitters has been a big part of this whole thing. And I know Devin said that he was working on creating logos and kind of branding for every single one of the groups to kind of keep things similar. What have you spoken to Devin about, if anything? And most importantly, like I had said in our pregame chat, will there be a t-shirt for any events that are upcoming?
There may be. Devin actually reached out to me and mentioned that he would like to work on a logo for the group, and I said, absolutely, let's do it. I would like to have a palm tree in it, however. So I don't know, maybe that's kind of held things up a little bit, but he is apparently working on something for me, and I would like to incorporate that into maybe some of the giveaways that we do coming up. I guess one of the things that's I do wish that the Islanders were playing down here a bit more often so we could get the group together for the games themselves, more often. But, it'd be nice to have a t-shirt to go along with that.
You know, and I know this is a work in progress, and that's a big part of the reason why, we waited a couple of weeks to get you on because you needed to get settled. You needed to kind of establish yourself. And it seems like you are pretty adaptable of a person. It sounds to me like you've moved a couple of times, so this is kind of old hat for you.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I wish you nothing but the best in that regard.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's a great time to be an Islander fan, despite losing one of our better players, over the summer. I think, that they have a young core. I think, with the addition of Lou and Trotz, I think it's going to be I think we've got a good future, so really looking forward to it.
It's the first time in a long time where we can sit and we can look at stuff beyond the roster and say we're in good shape. I mean, when was the last time that the Islanders as a franchise have been able to say they have a potential Hall of Fame general manager and a potential Hall of Fame coach? Granted, Barry Trotz has only won one Stanley Cup, but he's found success everywhere he's been. And the assistants and other associate coaches that seem to follow him along are also character guys. So that's like, that blows me away that these guys follow him around from place to place. And, it's the possibilities are kind of endless, and it's at the end of the day, it's like this was the coach of the Capitals for the last 4 or 5 years, and they just won the Stanley Cup, and he's our coach. Like, that doesn't happen,
Not to Islanders, not to the Islander fans.
No, like, what is this feeling that we've been feeling? This positive stuff. This is weird. We don't normally feel this.
It's very, very unfamiliar.
But, so. Kevin, it's been great talking. Tell us again where we can find you personally, where we can, hopefully find you in the future.
Yeah. So it's the Isles Meetup _TPA, Isles Meetup Tampa on Twitter. And all right. Look for my Facebook soon.
All right. And your personal Twitter, if you want me to give that out as well.
Yeah, so my personal Twitter is Kevin M. Carney. So it's at KevinMcarney.
All right, look for all those links in the description. You know, once again, we will be giving away a t-shirt when it is appropriate, once Kevin is all set up. And we hope to do the same thing for each of these Isles Meetup groups. And at some point, once everybody is all established, I'm going to have a big post up that's going to be like a calendar with a bunch of links. Read about all the different groups. You want to go and you can attend. You can contact everybody. So it's all in one spot, easy to find. If you're going to travel, this is the thing to do. If you're an Islander fan, I know I would love to do it. Everybody needs to just have a great time following the Islanders around. So, Kevin, thanks again for stopping by.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, now it's time for some Twitter questions. The first question is from Nightvine. Do you think the Isles are seriously in on any of the Panarin, Pacioretty, or Carlson talk, and what do you think the cost would be? Now, obviously, with Lou Lamoriello, we have no idea what's going on. There's absolutely no leaks other than that one story in the fourth period the other day. So could we potentially be in? I'm sure that Lamoriello is doing his due diligence and kicking the tires and will make any deals possible to improve the Islanders as a club. Oh, wait, no, sorry. That was the last general manager's spiel. I'm sure that he is actively working, talking, doing general manager things. I mean, that's what he does. That's Lou's job, right? So I don't think Pacioretty is a fit. Not for the contract that he's going to want and his age. I love the Panarin opportunity. But to be honest with you, who do you give up? I mean, you're going to lose somebody. It could be Lee. You know, it could be, I don't know, maybe even Bolivier. They're going to want somebody back that's cost-controlled. So maybe an expiring contract, maybe even Jordan Eberle. That would be something to think about as well. As far as Carlson goes, I don't know if the Islanders are going to be on his short list or if it's even really a legit possibility. The next question, and the only two questions for today, which works out because we went really long with Stephen Wood, is from A Voice for Animals, also known as Sean Walters 041. Who has a better chance of sticking with the big club, Hosang or Bellows, or is there a good chance both make it and a couple of new additions don't? Thanks, Mike. Thank you. Honestly, Hosang is going to be at the top of the list. I know that they said Bellows also was impressive over the summer and I believe in the Worlds. So I could see the both of them as forwards being near the top of call-ups. I believe, you know, you have a couple of other kids raring to go, and you never know. These veterans that they brought in could be waived. They could be sent down to Bridgeport. You know, they could just be terminated. Who knows what's going to happen there? There is definitely a logjam of forwards. We know that. As far as defense, you know, I believe Arthur Staple reported that Taves was going to be reporting to the big camp and not the prospect camp, so that's a positive as well. So for sure, Hosang definitely tops that list, and he could force a guy like Kunockel or somebody else out. You never know. All right, as always, thanks for sending in all these awesome Twitter questions week after week. You guys definitely keep this going with all the support and awesome questions. Follow us along if you're not. At Faithful Isles, which is the podcast account, obviously, and at Isles Blogger, which is my main account where you could find me most days chatting away, giving hot takes, and everything like that. Thanks again for listening.